It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Midwest Madness podcast here on the 1012 Network, talking all things Big 12 basketball. Now that we are finally a week and a half into the basketball season, like I mentioned to y'all at the top of our second part of the Big 12 preview, I'll be having a co-host joining me regularly on this show, Ben Hazel. Talked about it a fair amount without naming you. Really excited to have you joining me here to talk some Big 12 basketball. And I was going to say, I think I kind of introduced myself to y'all. I'm also co-host on the 1012 Network's Houston show, Scott Holland podcast, and have been a basketball watcher, especially the Big 12 for the past 26 years. Ben has a lot more exposure to high level basketball than me. Excited to have his perspective on here. Ben, why don't you tell all the folks listening here, like, who you are and all that fun stuff?
Yeah. So I'll keep that part short, but before I get into it, you know, just wanted to say thanks for letting me come on. You know, love talking hoops. The Big 12 is it's a great conference to cover. So a lot to talk about, especially considering this week. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much, you know, you introduced or brought up about my own history, but played basketball at Princeton for 4 years. We went to the NCAA tournament once. We lost to Kentucky at the buzzer. From Brandon Knight making his one field goal for the game. Over the past 2 years, was working with UCF as a grad assistant. So was on the staff doing player development, working guys out, and still do that today. So yeah, that's kind of my basketball career in a nutshell. I'm from the DC area. So, you know, the basketball mecca, the best place to come and play basketball and be from, put the most pros and college players out. Of course, that's my personal opinion. So
there's like one New York City guy listening right now who's just like screaming at his phone or device. He's like, no,
don't
it's
fact
not.
Check it. I mean,
no,
we can not. Debate it. We can debate it for sure. But, you know, I'm a little biased, but hey.
No, and certainly I wouldn't contradict you on that one there. So going to talk about some things tonight. Obviously, we're about a week and a half, give or take, into the season. And, you know, I think I'm always so excited for college basketball to be back. I mean, we go over 7 months without it in our lives, from the championship game to the first week, and then you get to the first night, like, basketball's back, and then you go see the actual slate and you're like, ooh, that's bad. And I again understand why, like, the teams in the Big 12 are about to subject themselves here in a couple months to a gauntlet of a conference schedule, but like, you see a lot of the games and you're just like, okay, like, all respect to my alma mater, don't think I learned a whole lot about Houston playing UL Monroe on the first night. And that will not be a game we discussed in depth. You're dying for my UL Monroe thoughts. That's like 3 episodes ago on my other podcast. I don't think anyone's dying for my UL Monroe thoughts out there, Ben, but there's been some good games here, especially last night, Kansas, Kentucky. We were just talking about it off air before this one. And I think my first thought about this one, 88, 82. Am I remembering it correctly?
89, 84. Yep.
Had the margin, misremembered the score, didn't put it in my notes there. It's the most basic ass take, but just like Hunter Dickinson on this Kansas team. I mean, it all made sense. He'd shown us what he could do at Michigan, a very unique player. I think we both said, not sure how it'll translate beyond this level, but a guy, very good collegiate player, about to play for a very good program, and a guy himself who always finds creative ways to use players. And just, it's hard to tap the brakes on thinking this guy could be the Big 12 player of the year and maybe in the national player of the year conversation when you're going for 27 and 21 against Kentucky, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're on that stage doing what he did. I mean, that'll, you know, put anybody, you know, in the Wooden Award watch. Luckily for him, he was already on that watch. So it kind of solidifies his spot. And I think, you know, he's an older guy as far as college is concerned. So I think you can kind of expect that throughout the season. He's a veteran. He's been around the block. So I think he will definitely be there at the end. One thing I want to say about him is that he is a DC product, you know, just saying to those New York, all those other states, he is a DC guy and it does show. But, you know, Kentucky's a really good team. I mean, as we know, everybody looks forward to this matchup. It's always one to watch. I thought, you know, couldn't really tell too much as far as, you know, rotations schematically with either team, but they were definitely going back and forth and the talent showed. Kansas showed why they're number one. You know, they have a lot of different options and I think they got a really good balance. I think one thing that stuck out is just that pace, man, the Big 12 pace. I mean, even if you go down the list, you look at Baylor, you look at TCU, you look at BYU. I mean, you saw a lot of speed from these guys. All over the court.
Yeah, I was that you actually, I was going to say, it's good omen for our podcast partnership because that's literally in my notes that Kansas right now, as we record this, number one in the country in adjusted tempo, which like South's teams generally go a bit faster. But I went back and looked at the numbers like the last time they played this fast in a full season. And this is going way back. This is like my freshman year of high school. Roy Williams, second to last year, there was the last time they were top 10 in the country in adjusted tempo. So that'd be interesting. I mean, whether that's something, I mean, they're going to be a up tempo. They're going to be a quicker team regardless. I think that's easy to say here three games in, but I'll be curious over the course of the rest of the season, does Self play that fast the entire year? Do maybe they slow it down a little bit?
Like I think he might have to. So that's one of the chinks in the armor that I saw. Was, you know, you saw the load carried by 3-4 guys. I think they played a total of 8 people.
Yep. Not a deep bench. Yeah.
Their bench contributed 2 points. Having a center, like we played when I was a grad assistant at UCF, we played against Michigan while Hunter was there. You know, we ended up winning that game actually, and Hunter was in foul trouble. So it's like, what is Kansas going to do in the off chance that, you know, hey, you go on the road to one of these crazier environments? Not going to say the refs, you know, are biased in any way, but it could happen, especially from your 7-2 center. So who do they go to? How does that rotation look? And playing fast typically lends to that. So, but again, he is an older guy. So, you know, he's not as susceptible as foul trouble as, you know, some of the younger bigs you might expect.
He's a unicorn, man. There's nobody out there just about that does in college basketball exactly what Hunter Dickinson does in terms of like the ball handling skill, the size, the standard big man stuff, but also the stuff that you expect perimeter guys to have. I wanted to also mention a couple other Kansas guys, KJ Adams and Kevin McCullough. I mean, they're going to get overlooked because I mean, Hunter Dickinson commands so much attention, but those guys are critical. Those are going to be key dudes to this remaining an elite team as I think we get deeper into the season. Yeah, hard to argue anyone in any conference in the country, though, is the number one team besides this Kansas team. It's everyone's played 3-4 games, so you don't really know everyone that well. But, I mean, given the limited data we have, I mean, it's got to be the Jayhawks.
A player that really stuck out to me was his DeJuan Harris, the point guard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's good.
So, I mean, he literally did everything that you could want out of a point guard. I mean, you're a Houston guy. That's one thing that you can always rely on with what Jamal Sneed at the point guard spot. Like late shots, not a shooter, but will make it when it matters. You know, can go 3-for-3 from the 3-point line, you know, give you 8 or 9 assists and make those timely baskets and get people the ball when you need them. And I thought he did just that. And especially it being so early on, you expected them to kind of have a few more turnovers like you saw probably around the conference, which you would think, you know, as college basketball goes on, a lot of transfers that'll come down. But he came out the gates and really, I thought, controlled the tempo and really did all the right things to help his team win. So he's another guy that I think is like a really core piece, and is him and Hunter, I think, are a really good combo. But that's where I can see a let off if those guys are not in the lineup because of what they do for everybody else.
Yeah, like you said, we're spoiled in this conference with point guards between him and Jamal Shedd and several other guys. Again, someone's going to get mad that I didn't mention their point with him. Also going to mention shutting down Kentucky's two, I think, elite one-and-done type guys, DJ Wagner and Justin Edwards, a combined, I think, 1 field goal between those two guys. Not bad to have that level of offensive skill and also to, obviously, you know, have what Kansas has. And I think going Adams and McCullough, I think those are your big guys there, and probably get the most credit for that.
Yeah, no, I think in the first game, all you're really looking at is just what kind of talent we have, or not the first game, but such early games. You know, scouting reports aren't that thick. Got a lot of transfers. Not really sure how roles are going to play out. Not really sure about minutes besides maybe a handful. So it really just is similar to your roll the balls out and see how it goes type of thing. Of course, you do put in your scouting report and try to have that, but you're quick to adjust it just because, you know, guy might be labeled as a non-shooter and then he comes in and makes three threes to start. You're like, okay, we're not going to guard him like that for the rest of the game. So, you know, I think Kansas, again, their talent showed. They did a good job on those guys specifically, for sure. I think Hunter played a huge part in that. But those guys are young, too. So I think if we ran this rematch back, it'll look completely different by the end of the season.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing with Calipari's teams. Not so much lately, but, like, historically, he's had some very young teams eventually kind of figure things out later in the season. That would be a fun one if we get it, like, Elite Eight, somewhere in that range of the tournament.
Most definitely. That would be must-see TV.
Yep. I was going to say, unless you had any other Kansas, Kentucky thoughts, I was going to move on to, I think, the best game of the first 2 days last week, Baylor-Auburn up in South Dakota.
Oh, that was another one. That was a really fun game to watch. Extremely competitive. A lot of talent on both ends. You know, just guards going at it, going back and forth, full court, fast-paced. A lot of up-tempo, another game where, you know, the balls are rolled out, really can see, let the talent shine, and it did just that. I mean, Jacoby Walker is one and done, you know.
Yeah.
It is true. You know, you hear it about a lot of guys, but with that kid, when you watch him, you're like, he is special. So that 88-82 win for Baylor, I think, is a good sign that they are going to be, you know, something to reckon with in March.
I just appreciate Baylor and K-State both actually playing like good opponents early. So it's just like, okay, like you and I aren't sitting here trying to figure out whether Baylor beating, you know, someone by 45 or 50, like what that exactly means. Like, no, you saw them on a neutral court beat a team that's a perennial NCAA team. And yeah, Jacoby Walter kind of knew going in, like, okay, this guy is a candidate, but you know, how does he respond when the lights go on, the games actually count for something in college? And it's just like, oh yeah, he set the Baylor freshman scoring record. I think he'll be all right. I think this will be about 4 months of us watching this guy in college before he's a lottery pick sometime early summer next year. And again, like this guy's gonna have down games. Even the very best one and done guys will have some bad performances in there. But you're seeing his ceiling. You're seeing a guy who, yeah, there's not more than 1 year of college in this guy. I think the surprise there, maybe not the surprise, because I kept seeing it whispered about him in the preseason. I'm probably gonna butcher his name, so here we go. But Eves Misi, another really, really hyped freshman on that Baylor team, made some highlight reel plays coming off the bench. I'm curious to see how his role, because he didn't start. They have a veteran big man there, but like to see how his role develops. Because Walter, yeah, we know like this guy. Okay, like one of the very best recruits in the country. Baylor does a good job with like one and done guy. Like even if his performance is really incredible, him doing that isn't necessarily a surprise, but like to have this big man, this freshman big man do this, I think sometimes maybe there's a bigger learning curve also with big man going from the prep level to the college level, and to do that, do it against an Auburn team that has a really good veteran front court guy in Janai Broome. Really, really impressive. And another guy who could potentially work his way into being a one and done guy this coming season.
Yeah, this season is going to be extremely interesting. I mean, there's a lot of storylines and a lot of talent on a lot of these teams. I mean, when you talked a little bit about scheduling, kind of some insight into that is teams that schedule, you know, really tough games early, especially in a conference like ours, have aspirations and expectations of being there in the end, of being in big games late in the season. Because you don't need to search for quad one wins in our conference. Your conference will allow, the Big 12 will allow for that in itself. So when you do it at a conference, it just kind of shows like, hey, you're doing this more for preparation because you know you're nowhere close to your final form. You don't, especially with how the transfers and, you know, all the moving pieces, you don't really know what you have like you would in the past. So when they're scheduling those teams, they have those expectations. So, you know, you can't do anything but appreciate it. I mean, a lot of teams will, you know, clearly, as we saw, go on different trajectories, no matter where they were ranked preseason. So, you know, it's all playing out for everybody. But those teams have a little bit more inside knowledge to say, like, hey, I think we're going to be in the mix.
And yeah, and going back to their past couple seasons, like Baylor's been a good team. And I think they probably looked at this team and said, okay, like, we know this is an NCAA team, but, you know, Baylor exited the first weekend of the last two tournaments. It's like, okay, like, what can we do to get ourselves as ready as humanly possible to play on a neutral site against a team that I'm sure is going to be in the field of 68 come 4 months from now? And yeah, no, I think that's pretty cool. You mentioned the transfers too. I want to shout out a couple of Baylor transfers. Ray J. Dennis was a really, really good MAC player at Toledo, and Jade Nunn from Virginia Commonwealth. Not coincidentally, those two guys and Misi were a big part of the 11-0 run where Baylor really separated themselves from Auburn in this one. So obviously, like Hunter Dickinson with the Kansas game, Jacoby Walter's going to consume a lot of the oxygen when it comes to this game. But like, that's three really good guys right there. And I just patting myself on the back. I'm sure I'm going to not bring this up whenever Baylor, just because, you know, again, it's the great thing about college basketball. Everyone's going to lose at least 5 to 7 games, like sometime between now and March. But like, I feel like I was a little higher on them preseason than a lot of people. And, you know, just I'm cashing those checks now 3 games in and just, you know.
Hey, man, you're right. You're right. Genius. When you're right, you're right.
We'll see. We'll see if Jacoby Walter goes like 1 for 12 at BYU here in 3 months. We'll see if I'm so quick to bring it up or something like that.
I think we can expect him to average around 18. So, you know, I mean, whenever somebody averages 18, right, like you can look at it and be like, hey, averages 18. Is this a range between he goes from 15 to 20, or is this a guy that might go for 30 and then give you, you know, 8-9 points one night? So, you know, it's comes with the territory, but I don't think that makes you less right at the end of the day.
That's true. appreciate you. Unless you have any other thoughts about this one, I was going to go to the first game that we're going to talk about tonight that was actually on somebody's home court, BYU hosting a recent Final Four team, San Diego State in Provo last weekend.
Yeah, no, that game was a shocker to most. But now just kind of looking at San Diego State, not sure it means what a BYU fan might tell you it means, but great signs to say the least. I mean, protecting home court in conference is the name of the game. So they definitely look like a Big 12 team with that crowd, how they played. So, you know, it was definitely a message to the rest of the league and the conference.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, San Diego State's a pretty consistently good team at their level. So I'm sure it'll be a decent win when it's all said and done. I don't think they're going to be a repeat Final Four team or anything like that. I think I mostly agree with you on that. Really, my biggest takeaway, I just think this game was a demonstration of how hard it's going to be to play in Provo and play in the Marriott Center for a lot of teams in the Big 12, even the top tier of Big 12 teams this year. I mean, obviously, they got to go away from the Marriott Center. And I think that's where BYU sinks down to being, you know, a solid team, but probably in that group of teams just on the wrong side of the bubble. But like, maybe their preseason, maybe they do so well in the home games that, you know, people end up being kind of low on them in their preseason predictions. I wanted to highlight a couple players too, and really actually zoom out a bit. Like, their biggest problem last year when they were not that great West Coast Conference team was they just could not hit three pointers to save their lives. And they've been, I think, shooting a hair under 40% this season, including a good opponent here in San Diego State. So, and also wanted to shout one of my favorite players, Fuseni Traore, who's like a throwback big man. And I mean this in the most complimentary way, he is the most Houston player that is not playing for the University of Houston right now, just because he's a 6'7" offensive rebounding kind of big man, but also their assist leader too, which I think is something I didn't think the guy had in him, honestly. And I think long term, I'm curious. They got a couple of last year stars coming off the bench. I mean, you know better than me the dynamic of playing on a college team. I'm curious, like, will those two guys, I'm referring to Jackson Robinson and Dalen Hall, like, does that work long term coming off the bench like they did in this one? I mean, if the team does well, yeah, that it probably is based on, you know, how the team does on the whole. So,
well, yeah, and those guys are veterans. So the one thing that you care about at the end of the day that you learn over time is starting is one thing, but minutes are another. They came in and gave 42 points off the bench.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, yeah, you didn't start, but I'm sure San Diego State walks away like, hey, our scouting report would have been completely tailored around those guys as if they were starters, right? So I think if I'm a BYU fan, I'm extremely encouraged, right? Like, you got that firepower coming off the bench, and they shot the ball really well. I mean, of course, it's always, you know, take it with a grain of salt at home to a certain extent. But, you know, they rose to the occasion. As far as playing through the big man, I think that was a strategic move. When you're trying to encourage, you know, 3-point shots and how he can easily become an assist leader, is because he's not an overly skilled big. So he's not getting that ball. And like, once it comes in, it's not going back out. He gets it. He stays under control. He's 6'7". So half the shots with those 7-footers, if he's catching it with his back to the basket, it's not ideal for him in the first place to score. So if you're trying to get 3-point shooters, I watched a little bit of that game. Like, they play through the big, and then, you know, it works to your advantage as far as the angles from a defender trying to guard both. If I'm trying to see a 3-point shooter and the ball's behind me, it's a lot harder to, you know, stop that guy from getting an open shot. So I think they got the right pieces in the right place. I think people really undersold like how competitive they will be, especially in the conference. That trip to Utah for all the teams is going to be tough. That environment's looking like it's going to be, you know, one to that you won't be able to sleep on as an opponent. So great win for them. We'll see how it plays out for San Diego State and BYU, but I think they showed some great signs.
Agreed. I'll stay in the Western United States, about 3 miles from where I sit here, beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. K-State opened their season against the USC Trojans. And not to keep repeating myself, but again, appreciate that Jerome Tang, with a lot of like key guys to replace off of last year's team, wasn't afraid to challenge him to himself and go play in an event with a top 25 opponent like USC, a team. The Trojans, again, won't dwell on them too much, as this is a Big 12 focused podcast, but a team that's got a really good combination of like talented, experienced guys, Boogie Ellis, I think chief among them, Kobe Johnson as well, but also the guy who's like has a pretty good chance of being the number one pick in next year's draft, and Isaiah Collier as well, to go against that when you're trying to replace your top scorers and Marquise Noel, one of the best point guards in the country. I appreciate that he did that. It's kind of a baptism by fire there, which we'll get to the next game, the UCF game as well, which I felt was kind of a similar thing. I feel like even this loss, like Jerome Tang learned a lot about his team in this game.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely did. And this was one of those games that I watched originally and was like, okay, you know, Kansas State looks like they got some pieces. I mean, it's one of those, was that a good move? Was it not? The reason why I say it was a good move at the time, you know, USC's ranked 21st in the country. They got a lot of talent, potential pros. They had a lot of transfers here at Kansas State come in, and they thought, you know, those guys would be ready to play to a certain extent, especially with those guys being upperclassmen. You have Tyler Perry, Cam Carter, and I think the kid Arthur. So, you know, your main contributors are veterans, so you would think they would be able to adjust, but it didn't really show through. They shot 22% from the field, shooting 30% from three between those three. Right. And those are your leading scorers. So that's one thing that I would say, like, if I'm a fan, like, I'm happy about that, because it's like these guys clearly aren't comfortable. I would be willing to bet the house that they will shoot better numbers than that. 17 turnovers, you probably see that come down to. But USC, they just lost to Appalachian State by 10 points the other night. So like
Kobe Johnson, I mean, it's still bad, but Kobe Johnson was out for that one, I think. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're a 1-2 team right now. You know, you don't need guys for them getting hurt and losing games like that. So we'll see. But Kansas State, I think, will be tough at the end. I mean, they got talent. Like, I mean, most of those, all the teams that we named and watched the games, I mean, there's a reason they got guys that, you know, can really put the ball in the basket in a lot of different ways. They just didn't have the shots fall in that game. But I think as they get more comfortable, you know, that's the number one thing that you'll see improve pretty much across college basketball.
Yeah, because like, you look at this game, Tyler Perry is 5 of 17 from the field, but like you look at the game since then, not as good opponents, but like is looking more comfortable since. Arthur Kaluma is going to do better than 1 for 11 from the field, probably more games than not this season. Yeah. I think the biggest question with them is just figuring out their front court. Like, probably expect to have Naquan Tomlin. He gets suspended right before the season. I still think the Cats learned more about themselves than the majority of the teams in this conference from that game. Even if USC, I don't know, maybe if a couple months from now that win or that loss ages pretty badly, but obviously, yeah, I think the having Big 12 conference play also gives you a little bit of a margin of error there.
Yeah, and I mean, like we talked about a little bit earlier, like quad one wins you don't have to seek out. So even if that team doesn't necessarily pan out, you know, your biggest opportunities are always ahead of you with the luxury of being in the best basketball conference in the country.
Exactly. Let's talk about UCF going to Miami, a really challenging one. I don't have to search my mind too far. They ended U of H's season a little under 8 months ago in the Sweet 16. I don't think you are going to find some, I think, guard groups that are maybe more future NBA talented than this Miami group. But in terms of length and veteran experience, I don't think you are going to find a better group to really test yourself. Because I when I looked at UCF in the preseason, I mean, it's not a secret, it's 14th out of 14 teams. But like the more I dug in the guard group, especially the more I dug in the guard group, I'm like, it's actually a pretty good guard group. And like Dawkins Wings had pretty good guard groups there. Like the team's decent. I talked myself into them a bit more than I probably did at the start. And like, that's a great, and like Miami is a great tag, Nigel Pack and that entire group of guards. Like, it's going to be a tough game. Your chances are, whoever you are, you're probably going to lose to Miami at Miami. Like, that's just a team playing really, really good basketball going back to last season. But
yeah,
it was a good test. I think like K-State in that loss out here in Vegas, I think UCF learned a lot about themselves and Coral Gables that game.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think probably if you look at this first few games, I think what you see is you just see where you can improve, and you see, you know, where you're not as good. But then also you see a little bit of like when you're not as good, how bad it can get. Right. So I think UCF probably got the full gambit of that against Miami. It was a game of runs, like, you know, down 20, cut it to 6, lose by 16. You know, Miami was in control of that game pretty much the entire time. But I think UCF is still trying to get a gauge on what it's going to be like night in and night out in the Big 12. So this was their first kind of showing that relying on a lot of transfers, just like everybody else. One thing that I think, you know, kind of scares me about them is just they don't shoot the ball that well as far as from the 3-point line. So figuring that piece out combined with, you know, kind of the rotations and how they want to, what they want to hang their hat on this season and make themselves the most competitive in the conference when that time comes around. They're figuring that part out, but I think, you know, they have some things that they can really build on. But I think one thing that they need to address is just, you know, they just haven't been shooting the ball that well and don't necessarily have a bunch of guys that were playing that I would look to and say, like, hey, he's a really good shooter. He's just not making it. They have a lot of slashers, a lot of guys that can get to the basket. So how they can balance the two and play off of that is what they're figuring out now.
I've been impressed with Jalen Sellers, despite the fact that you kind of alluded to it there. Like, nobody shot the ball pretty well from deep. I mean, I don't think he's going to, I mean, he came in from Ball State. I don't think he's going to ultimately, when the season's all said and done, shoot the ball as well. I don't think that's going to necessarily translate because it's, you're going from the MAC to the Big 12, but like, I could see him being a 36-37% guy from 3-point range when it's all done.
Sure.
And that he's been able to do as much as he has as a scorer in these first couple games while not shooting the level I think he will from the outside. That intrigues me. And I think you needed someone alongside Darius Johnson out of these transfers to make things happen. I again, obviously not shooting that well early, but like, you challenge yourself with a tough opponent. It's not like you're shooting badly against a couple of bye game level opponents yet. FIU, not that great, though. I think they outperformed I think they outperformed the spread by about double on that, which I think is it's a good solid metric there. And I think that'll get better. Really, my concern with UCF isn't the guard group, even if guys aren't hitting shots early. I think that's actually a pretty good guard group. I think that's better than the worst guard group in this league. It's the front court that worries me. It's CJ Walker not being healthy that maybe worries me a bit more than that. And I like what I've seen very early returns from Jalen Sellers.
Well, the thing about college basketball nowadays is just across the board, besides Hunter Dickinson, most of the team's best players play on the wing.
Yep.
So UCF actually kind of really was out physical to Miami in the paint. I mean, they're undersized. They had the kid Norchad who's plays the center spot. He's about 6'7", 6'8", and not a big bruiser, but takes advantage of things on the wing. But so UCF actually had the size advantage. They have decent size at the center position. with Ibrahima and Omar. I think it's how they match up and how they can balance, you know, what they do best with that front court is the challenge, just because, you know, your best players play fast. They're, you know, at the guard spot. You have Darius Johnson and Jalen Sellers. They're really athletic and get up and down the floor. And that's going to have to be how UCF goes about it offensively. One thing that lends to that is that you have to pick up defensively, and how much, you know, can those guys, you know, do that is what they're going to be looking for moving forward. So, you know, the front court spot in our conference is probably the lesser of the two evils when you look at over the course of the season.
Actually, I got to see Ibrahim Diallo in person out here at the Mountain West tournament. It's just like great shot blocker. No idea how long he could stay on the, because he's a big, he's 7 foot something, but also like upper 200s, big dude. That's my pick. If he can get on the court long enough, minutes wise, that's my pick for a Big 12 blocks leader right there. I don't think he'll lead the Big 12 in anything else, but that dude's a shot blocker.
Yeah. I mean, his size is always felt once he steps on the court. So, you know, he's definitely going to be a presence. It's the other things. I think what, you know, UCF and Coach Dawkins is behind the scenes trying to figure out, how do I complement the 7-2 guy? How do I play a style that leads to better offensive production, but still kind of limits the turnovers and still allows his presence to be felt on the defensive end? Things like that, because Miami is a team that drag people away from the basket. Oh, yeah. So
that's the perimeter team in terms of like top 25 teams out there.
Exactly. And most teams utilize their bigs out of the pick and roll. So that's why even Omar starts, because he can guard the pick and roll a little bit better. Because, I mean, even Hunter, a lot of his baskets are coming off the roll. But in that, pretty much every team that we, you know, play against, their biggest threat is that pick and roll option and their pick and pop option. So it's how he's able to handle that will be the telltale sign of like how much he can contribute over the season and, you know, be a blocks leader.
All right. So we have a very, very busy slate coming up here. This is one of my favorite sports parts of the year, the Thanksgiving multi-team team events. I probably like it because I didn't have to like be away from my family on Thanksgiving in like Fort Myers or Las Vegas or New York City for this big event, but like love just wall-to-wall basketball. And I think unlike maybe the first week and change of the season where, I mean, you get some good high-level matchups, but you also get a lot of teams playing games that they are sure are going to be wins, a lot of bye games in there. And so, and we get like basically everybody in the Big 12 just about is playing some big event. And I think none bigger than Kansas at the Maui Invitational, which is being held in Honolulu this year because of obviously everything terrible happened in Maui. And the Jayhawks open the Chaminade, and sorry, Chaminade, we're not going to do a detailed breakdown of y'all, but like, I think this is an exciting event because we potentially get to see the Jayhawks facing off with, you know, your Gonzaga, Purdue, Tennessee, Marquette level of teams. And we just got done seeing them against Kentucky, so it's not like we haven't got to see Kansas against high level competition, but I love the compressed nature that you get to see potentially a team like Kansas play two or three different high-level opponents in like a short stretch of time.
There's nothing better. I mean, and as the number one, you love to see it. Hey, you know, they're at the top of the mountain right now, or at least, you know, that's what the coaches poll says. So we love that they're willing to take on challengers. You don't want a champion that runs. So, hey, there's nothing better than that they embrace it and accept it and are out to prove why. I think that's a strategy that will, you know, help them out. That clearly they're a team that's probably looking at themselves as a potential one seed in this tournament this year. So this is what that is about.
Even though they play like a different style and they wouldn't necessarily matched up on each other a lot, I hope we somehow get Zach Edey and Hunter Dickinson on the court against each other at the same time. I think that would be worth the price of admission, like I'm flying out there to pay for it, but like a worth the worth the price of admission kind of like matchup to watch between those two guys. And I mean, obviously, all the other ones too. It's not that like Tennessee, Kansas, or Marquette, Kansas, or Gonzaga, Kansas wouldn't also present some really cool matchups there.
No, that's one to watch. I mean, that's a NBA watch, right? Like, hey, who this is a matchup. I know for those guys, right? If you're talking about I'm a player, if I'm a Hunter Dickinson and I want to get drafted and I want to play at the next level, and even a Zach Edey, this is something that affects that. This game specifically affects that. You talk about the matchup, who it's against, another equal caliber player. So those are the things you look forward to. So if they're in the, if they're playing against each other, the coaches know that too. So this early in the season, I can almost guarantee that you'll see it. So right. If you're in the area and can go, I would go.
Yeah. If you got a thousand or so dollars burning a hole in your pocket to fly to Honolulu, would encourage you to do so.
And if you got an extra one, I'm all open to going too. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I think my significant other can handle Thanksgiving with the family here. I'll just jet off to Hawaii and then go dig my grave when I get back here. Baylor also at another big event, the NIT season tip off in Brooklyn. Not really a super intriguing matchup to start opening up with Oregon State. You take care of business there though, and you get a decent a follow up Pitt, who was an NCAA team last year. Actually, ended Iowa State season. Could be a pretty good one there. Florida, a little bit less so, but still an opponent that they're gonna learn more about than probably your average early season game, the Bears.
Yeah, quality matchups. That's really what it is. And for them, while they're figuring out, you know, a little bit of the small things, especially offensively, defensively, cutting down on turnovers, things like that. They shot the ball really well last game, but just kind of seeing how to maintain that. Seeing who are the main contributors, the consistent contributors. I think these are great matchups for that. Give you different looks, different conferences, but teams that, you know, are no slouches themselves and could easily, you know, be a team that is in the tournament, depending on, you know, how they shape up in their respective conferences. But Baylor, I think great matchups, great location as far as getting guys out and getting them seen when you have a one and done. Like they have, you know, that's one of the selling points, getting them out there, getting them seen, getting them in front of these scouts, big arenas, things like that. So I think they're doing just that. I think they'll be fun. They should run through it. But, you know, I don't think it'll go untested.
Oh, yeah. Probably a few NBA teams in the building there to watch Walter and Misi. Staying in the greater New York City area, Texas will be at the Empire Classic at Madison Square Garden. And an intriguing team at the top of the conference. I haven't talked about them yet because they've literally played nobody at this point. Yeah. They have two wins in the most technical sense. I still think this is a good team, but I think the team that also has the best potential matchup, it won't be their first round, provided they take care of business against Louisville, which that's a mess. It's very weird for me. If somebody's watched college basketball as long as I have, yeah, like Louisville be this bad. I kind of just took it for granted that they're going to be a top 25 tournament team. I mean,
they go from the Peyton Sivas, the Ish Smiths, those guys, and then, you know, they go to,
I'm gonna butcher the stats, not my notes, but they hadn't lost, I think before this coach, they hadn't lost a November game in some just absurd amount of time, like a decade or so, maybe a couple decades, like I can't remember exactly. And then just like have just all these just really bad, just like quad 3 and 4 losses. Yeah. Like they won yeah, four games last year.
They've been on a really, really rough stretch. I mean, and the thing that people don't talk enough about in the media realm is the mental toll that it takes.
Oh yeah.
Like people that traveling and doing all that stuff and just taking loss after loss from coaching staff to trainers to managers, it has an effect on you. But I know I'm good friends with Nolan Smith, or, you know, knew him growing up. And that staff, I know it's a quality staff. They have a really good staff. Yeah. So I don't think they'll be down forever, but, you know, I don't think Texas should have too much of a problem.
No, and it'll set up a nice second round with UConn or Indiana. You're talking about obviously the defending national champions on one hand, and on the other hand, a really talented team. That, so I think as much as we kind of clowned their first two games, like you're almost certainly going to get, you're going to get an opponent that's going to tell you something about this Longhorn team, a team, Max Asemus and that guy, and how he's going to translate from being this just all world summit conference guy to a much tougher league. And I think that was my big question with the Longhorns was, okay, like Asemus is a scorer. Asemus is going to get buckets. Like I'm not doubting that one bit, but so much of what Oral Roberts did was tailored to him, and spacing and just having the whole thing was, and just like, how is this team is talented, but how are they going to basically, how are they going to set it up so this guy gets the level of shots that he got at the last place. So, I mean, very good test. We'll go from being like, we know nothing about him to they played one of the very best non-conference games, I think, in this league.
And one way that they did it, as far as making sure that at least he has the space to do what he does whenever he is called to do it, is put talent around him. You know, when you got guys that are transferring in that are at the level that they were at their respective schools, one thing that you don't want, or one thing that will always be easier for them, is being guarded by one person.
Yep.
So, you know, put some talent around him. He's a guy that, you know, of course, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out when you're playing other really, really talented guys. But I think his production is one that they're looking at as, hey, we need you to continue to be that guy. And we surrounded you with shooters like Ethiel Horton, transfer from UCF. So they surrounded him with some really good pieces that fit well together. Of course, like you said, it's untested, but I think there was some method to the madness and how they got the transfers that they got. And there's some method to them playing the good games when they're playing them. I think they took a reverse route instead of Kansas State. Like a Kansas State opens up with a big game like a USC. They took a different route. Let me get a few games to figure some things out, and then we'll hop into that ring and start playing with the big boys.
Yeah, I mean, again, hard to say much about the first couple of games, but Horton's really – he was one of the guys that thought, okay, like, he's transferring up a bit as a guy previously only played with UCF as an American team. But really, really strong early start from him. And we'll see, I think, subsequently how much of that is, okay, you're playing like Incarnate Word and whoever their other opponent is that didn't bother to learn, how much of it is, hey, like this guy, like you said, method to the madness, like this guy fits exactly what they want to do there. Going a little more tropical here, K-State will be at the Bahamas Championship. Not a bad place to spend your Thanksgiving, a little bit probably warmer and more tropical. You're in Florida though, so you're close.
I went there last year. It's a great trip.
Yeah,
it's a great trip.
Yeah, they'll get that. Then they'll get some good basketball too. Providence on Friday. Quick aside here: the fact that Kim English, because I remember watching Kim English when he's roughly my age as a college player, and how Kim English is running a Big East program. It's kind of wild to me personally, but good team to start with, and you get Miami or Georgia, and I love the idea of a possible K-State Miami matchup just for watchability.
Yep.
Like just Tyler Perry and that guard group against Nigel Pack and Miami and everything they have. That's a really good one. I'm rooting for that just because I want to watch the basketball game, not for any K-State allegiances. I want to see those two teams go head to head.
As far as an entire tournament, that's the one that I would watch if I'm following a Big 12 team. It would be Kansas State, because that matchup against Providence is not one that you can overlook.
No.
So they'll have two good games that are really big for seeing how they are going to bounce back, see if they were able to figure some things out, see if some of those guys that you named like Perry and Carter are a little more comfortable, which in the Sunshine State, in the lobby of the resort, not too many people in there. I think they can settle into some things in that tournament, but that's the tournament I would watch if I'm following a Big 12 team.
That's one of my favorite things, not specific to this game, but you watch and you'll see it. It's like in a ballroom. It's very clearly like, this isn't like what a normal basketball court, like
my brain's watching this.
Just like, does that, I'm curious, like, does that affect you as a shooter? I've heard guys say like, hey, the background and just the whole, like if the building is weird and just not what you're used to, that kind of throws off your equilibrium. Is there any like truth to that?
There is. There's a 100% truth to it. But I mean, it's something like for guys at this level, it takes, you know what I mean? It doesn't take too long. Right. So I think probably what the bigger adjustment is going from high school to college, where you're playing in, you could be playing in smaller gyms where the wall is right behind the basket. And then you go to a big arena, like in even those NBA arenas is where you're playing in college, especially at that level. And then that's where the basket looks a little different, but it doesn't take too long to get adjusted. I mean, you know, you get practice before the tournament, so you can figure out, you know, what you got to do to be able to make shots.
I was a ball boy for Rice years and years ago in the Houston area, and they used to have like this curtain over like one of their facing one of their free throw lines. It was literally like the rec center, like behind the curtain. It was a very very, very bad old arena. Probably maybe like the worst in Division One by the time they gutted the thing and turned it. And just like, I remember just like, even as like a 8-9 year old knows, like, man, like teams are really bad shooting free throws here. Yeah. Like I can imagine you're used to a certain kind of background.
Yeah. I mean, and that's like a thing that you experience, you know, especially mid-major, you know, you can have some arenas where home courts for the mid-majors where it's like, hey, this is pretty small, even if it gets loud and packed, but then you go play in an NCAA tournament game and it's like, okay, you know, this is not, it just has a completely different feel to it. But, you know, mid-majors upset the high majors all the time. So yep. you can get adjusted. It just takes a little second.
So we'll keep it tropical. We'll stay the Battle for Atlantis, which Texas Tech will be participating in. Really good opener. Another team that really, I mean, they played San Jose State, who isn't bad. I think it probably speaks to the level of early Big 12 competition. It's actually not one of the bad games there. But first real test for Grant McCaslin, the first year head coach there with Villanova. I mean, they did just get upset by Penn. I know they're coming off kind of a disappointing season by Villanova standards, but I think still pretty good test for the Red Raiders and some intriguing if they get past the Wildcats matchups later in this one. You get UNC, who I would assume is probably, I mean, wouldn't be the first time, but probably going to get past Northern Iowa in their first round game, and that would be a good one for the Red Raiders, even in a likely loss. Like I think just getting to that second round game against UNC, I think would be pretty good for that team.
For sure. I mean, they were projected to finish in the bottom half of the conference this year, but I think with the new coach, he's brought some new energy, definitely got them playing pretty good from the small sample size that you could see. Those games, like you said, will be their first, you know, real test this year. So we'll see how they respond. That's the only reason I didn't put them over like a Kansas State, because they do have the potential to play some really good games. The reason why I didn't say them as like the main tournament to watch for me from Big 12 was just they're untested. So we don't really know how it's going to go for them just yet with all the new pieces they got, transfers and coach wise. But knowing him and his history, they'll be competitive and they'll be in the mix for sure. But I don't know, you know, how those are going to play out. But if they do get the chance to play, I mean, playing Villanova is huge. But then if they win that and get the chance to play North Carolina, I think that, you know, right now, most of the teams are really just trying to send the message to everybody else.
Yeah, good field generally. You also Michigan, Memphis, Arkansas, and Stanford also in the field. Probably three tournament teams in Stanford out of that bunch there. But good field there. Also at the ESPN Events Invitational, Iowa State, I will be opening with Virginia Commonwealth. We'll be also playing Boise and Virginia Tech potentially as a later round matchup. You also have FAU, Texas A&M, and Penn State in this field. So Iowa State, one of many teams in this league who hasn't really tested themselves too much the first two or three games, but team I'm intrigued by. They've been a really good defensive team in the last two seasons and just have done the absolute bare minimum on offense to win basketball games. But a team that at least on paper in the preseason looked like they could be a bit more skilled offensively, a bit higher ceiling. Obviously can't really tell from the first three, but I think this will be the first real test of, okay, is Iowa State going to actually have an offense that's not like outside the top 100 of most of your offensive metrics?
Yeah. I mean, you don't know what they're going to hang their hat on. They've always been defensive minded, but that hasn't been their issue. So we saw some pretty good production out of them in their first set of games, but they're relatively untested. I think one thing that you want to just keep an eye out for, no matter who your team is one, just how well they're shooting the ball from the three-point line. And then I would really just keep an eye on just how many attempts they're trying to take, because that really shows you what the type of players you have hang their hat on. And it also will show you, if you're taking a lot and missing a lot and that stays the same, that most teams are forcing you to shoot a lot of shots and you're just not making them. And that's just a big factor in our game these days. So if that travels for them, great signs, not too big a test coming up, but if they can come out on the right side, if I'm a Cyclone fan, I could, you know, really get behind that.
Yeah, I'm going to watch a couple of guys. Taman Lipsey, who was one of their starting guards last year. Guy did a lot of good stuff, but really struggled. Like a lot of freshmen who aren't like the one-and-done caliber of guy. Yep. Struggled, kind of hit a wall, I think, around Big 12 play his first season. Like, is he able to be kind of a go-to guy offensively in their five-star freshman Omaha Bilyeu? I want to see how he does is this guy who I think is like one of going to be one of the better defenders in this league when it's all said and done this year. How does he do with a higher level of competition than like Green Bay, who was like one of their teams before? You're gonna learn more about this guy there. So those are two guys I'm watching from that one. Also, Oklahoma, a team like Iowa State that has blown out, I think, maybe a questionable early slate of competition, will be going to the San Diego Invitational opening with Iowa, who's going to at least test you. I thought it was really funny. Quick aside, won't get too sidetracked, I promise, but just like Iowa and Iowa State in the same state, like one of these teams, just Iowa defense completely optional. I think they were like almost outside the top 200 in defensive efficiency, but were like top five in offensive. Yeah. So just like very defense optional approach. And then the Iowa State, like very offense optional approach. Like just as somebody who likes different styles of college, I appreciate that. Like, I don't think I would love that if I was a fan of the team, because it's just like, oh God, we're going to struggle to get to 60, or like, hey, oh, we just cannot stop anybody who's like remotely good offensively. So wouldn't like it for me as a fan, like it for me as a general viewer of college basketball. And I will certainly test an Oklahoma team with a lot of new pieces defensively. And will this team be kind of the breakout team for Porter Moser, who did all that great stuff at Loyola previously, but first couple of years at Oklahoma, it's been kind of a process. You haven't necessarily seen the results there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And those teams, I mean, they're in the similar boat, like UCF, just trying to figure it out right now, like trying to get their footing, how they're going to play, who's going to do what. Oklahoma is pretty solid. They've always been pretty solid. You know, they typically keep things close. So I think they're just kind of putting their toe in the water. If I'm a casual fan, like, and just in general for how college goes, like the first 10 games are just figuring out what I'm good at. The last few games leading into the conference is more about, we need to be better at taking advantage of the other team's weaknesses. And then the conference is only that. So if you're a guy that can't shoot and you thought you were wide open before and you weren't making shots, you will be 10 times more wide open by the time January comes around than you ever have been. So those things just kind of progress over time. And that's the thing that I think you see change from your scorers, right? Like a Jalen Sellers, he goes left a lot. He's been averaging 20. By around game 10, I'm sure there will be some teams that they face where they're like, hey,
they got tape on him now. Yep.
Yeah. He can score anyway besides with his left hand. That's like an approach that other teams are talking about right now. So all of those adjustments will be made throughout the season. But right now, these Christmas or these holiday tournaments are really just for who you are as an individual. And Oklahoma gave themselves some pretty good tests over this time. These are the tournaments that when we come back and talk about, we'll be able to see kind of a lot more of who they are and what type of players they have.
So I'm going to group these next four together. I think we've been kind of tiering this in terms of, you know, okay, like these first handful, and there's some good teams in here, but I think maybe these are a little bit, I think, lesser fields of like BYU is the Vegas Showdown at Mandalay Bay. They'll play Arizona State as a tournament team, but not, I would say, necessarily a lock to be back there this year. If they win or, I guess, lose, they'll get NC State or Vandy. That'll be almost like a quasi BYU home game because Vegas has a huge Mormon population. Also, they're all like 3 or 4 hours away, so they'll get a friendly home court atmosphere away from Provo. But that'll be interesting to watch, just to see how much of what they do translates away from there. We talked about how good they looked at home against San Diego State, but I think really the test for this team will be how much can they do away from their home court, where they have like a really nice atmosphere and 15,000-16,000 fans. Houston at the Shriners Charleston Classic will be open with Towson, who they should get through. I think the bigger test is Utah or Wake in the semifinal game, and then whoever comes out, if they can get past Utah or Wake, and the other side of the bracket, St. John's, LSU, Dayton, or North Texas, if the Cougs can make the finals, which I think at least should be the expectation. I think the Cougs have done some good stuff through the first few games, but haven't really played any with a pulse. Anyone who would like at all challenge this team, will be the first time this group of players that has a few key new guys actually get something like a test. Probably, I mean, Towson more so than their previous few, but again, Utah, Wake more than Towson, and then whoever you get in the final more than probably Utah or Wake.
Yeah, I mean, they should run through that.
They should. That's yeah. The, you know, if they're, really if they're top 10 team, I mean, which they're, I think,
top 10 team that's fold, defensive yeah, minded, you know, like, even if the score is 50 to 55, like, they just grind games out. That's what they've always done. That's what they're known for. I shouldn't expect anything different in this tournament. Rob Sampson's got that thing like a well-oiled machine. So, you know, I don't even think he's doing the search for like who they are, because with how he plays, you know how we're going to play. It's the players that adjust to that part, especially defensively. I think just what he finds out is just who's going to be their main contributors offensively.
Yeah, he's going 10 or 11 deep, which is a little more than I expect he'll go when it comes to Big 12 player, even like the tougher non-conference games next month. And he's a couple skilled guys in LJ Carr and Damian Dunn, but yeah, like you said, like, you kind of know what Houston's going to do. Back to the New York City area, Oklahoma State's going to be at the Legends Classic. That actually starts tomorrow on Thursday the 16th, so we get a little pre-Thanksgiving basketball in our lives. We're opening a St. Bonaventure. And I mean, Oklahoma State, we didn't mention it because I think we tried to go for games that are good, but they lost at home. Yeah, they had to do it, man. Lost to Abilene Christian, didn't hit 60, and that was a team that pretty consistent. Like, if they don't have Cade Cunningham, they've pretty consistently had offensive questions under Mike Boynton. And they've always good defensive team. Like, I don't expect they'll be an easy team to play in Stillwater, but man, didn't do anything to quiet like the, I think, the preseason concerns that this team is going to have trouble scoring the ball for the umpteenth year in a row under the staff. But St. Bonaventure is a good test, and you'll get Auburn or Notre Dame in the following game. Probably Auburn. I think Notre Dame lost some awful bye game that I didn't commit to memory before this, but Auburn will be a good test if they can take care of business in Brooklyn against St. Bonaventure.
Yeah, I mean, for them, this is the first mental test of what the conference is like for all the new guys that they have. Take a tough one, you get no rest, got another one. So you got to regroup and recalibrate. So that's what this will be about for them. They really did drop a bad one early. I think they will kind of show some resolve since it is early on and, you know, you're on a holiday tournament. Those are always, you know, the vibes are still good at this point. But I do think if I'm an Oklahoma State fan, I am a little worried about what we have so far, but I think they'll show some signs of bounce back in this coming Thanksgiving tournament.
I mean, teams lose crazy games early in the season. There's absolutely a chance that in a couple of months that we look up and they're actually better than expected. Would not be the first time that I buried a team too early because of just a random first week non-conference loss. West Virginia is at the Fort Myers tip-off. They'll open up with SMU, who is just not a good team. Not a staff. That was a rough opponent as some. I mean, you followed an American team last year, just like I did. That was just they had Kendrick Davis's last year there a couple of years ago. They were pretty solid. They beat the Cougs in Dallas, but that is like they had to completely turn over the roster, new coaching staff, and just like that's right. And West Virginia,
rough patch.
Yeah, West Virginia needs that, and that's actually great news for West Virginia because they're just trying. I mean, you don't have a cook because of that awful medical event. I mean, sounds like he's getting better, but probably not guys returning anytime soon. You have Kirk Risa suspended for the first nine games, so we're not gonna see him for a while, and that's gonna be something long term with West Virginia. I mean, you talked about like the first 10 games there, like this guy's first 10 games are gonna take into conference play because he isn't able to be with the team right now and something to watch with them. But I think with West Virginia, it's just literally like win any basketball game that's in front of them, just because there's just everything that's going on with that program. Is interim coach Creasa getting suspended last minute, not having Raekwon Battle, the grad transfer they expected to be a really big guy for them this year. It's just getting past SMU, and then I can think of two teams I would rather not face more than Wisconsin and Virginia as your reward if you get past them, because those two teams are just gonna just play a really slowed down style, and it's the exact style you don't want to face when you have like a largely new roster and maybe an incomplete roster like the Mountaineers have.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not what you want to face. And then, I mean, even looking down the road, there's not a lot of teams in our conference that play that way either. Not good stylistically either, which is, I know, something that plays a factor in how you do pick a schedule. But I think it's just, they're looking for different tests, because you know, they're searching for answers, and they just had a series of unfortunate events. But one thing about West Virginia, it is a basketball town. They do love their basketball. They love this school of West Virginia like no other. They love basketball. They love football, but they definitely love their basketball too. So you can expect them to, I don't think this year will be the year, you know, that we see the uptick, but I think they'll start to show some, have some more good luck instead of bad. They've just pretty much been running into bad luck and things that you couldn't really plan for.
Yeah, I don't have any like a special rooting interest with West Virginia, but just like, yeah, like, come on. Like, just let's give the universe, give this team like something that's not like just disastrously bad for once. Like, look at the sun. And like we were talking about earlier with Provo, like Morgantown is going to be a tough place to go and win a basketball game. Like, just
always, consistently. Regardless of how they are. It is a tough place to play. The fans show up and show out, and I think that's why, you know, places like BYU will fit right in.
Yep.
And they have the exact same style of fan base, and they really have a vested interest, and these are not, you know, your typical dumb fans. I mean, they'll get crazy, they'll drink, but they're not, they know what's going on too. They follow follow the team, you know, from game to game. They just gotta settle into what they're gonna have, I think, is probably the hardest part, like with the coaching change, you have all these transfers. You just got a lot of things that you have to figure out before you can kind of settle in, and everybody can kind of be like, okay, I know we'll be okay with this, and we know we'll have these guys. Like, even knowing who's going to be on your roster is like a thing that they've had to deal with.
And one last quick one, the one game that we're talking about, it's not in a Thanksgiving multi-team event, but Cincinnati gets, I think, their first, I mean, I put it as a decent test in my notes, but I don't know, man. Georgia Tech might be one of the very worst power conference teams out there. Like, so it is, we'll just say, more of a test than their first couple of games. Like, more of a data point to actually see what this team's going to look like in Wes Miller's third year there with a pretty new looking team, but I think an intriguing team. At least we can look at that. Like, okay, we have a slightly better idea of what Cincinnati might be. They'll be playing them at home in the coming week or so.
Yeah, and they're a team that, I mean, Georgia Tech is actually probably that they would look at as a godsend at this point, just because they've had surprise, you know, things happen to the team in a negative light, things that they weren't expecting. I know a transfer got rejected.
Yeah, Aziz Bandogo.
Yeah, and I know he was expected to be a huge contributor. I know the kid Jameel Reynolds, another big kid, yep, who will be the main contributor. Extremely talented 7-foot center, wasn't able to play.
Lost like 30 or 40. I saw a picture because I saw Jameel Reynolds. I remember back when he was at UCF, saw him at Temple last year when they played Houston. Yep. I saw a picture of him from like their workouts, and it's just like, whoa, this dude like lost like 30 or 40 pounds. Like, this guy's a real serious.
I'm not
going
to go into the personal just off the, when he was at UCF, he was at his heaviest, and now he's looking like, you know, a tank.
Yeah.
Sculpted. Like, hold it against him. But he's there now. I mean, he looks ready to play. Yeah. But basically just the complications of even having those guys, right? Like, all your preseason work, your in practice scrimmages, you can throw that script out the window, your scrimmages, the whole thing. So they're still adjusting. So having a Georgia Tech on the schedule, I think, is, you know, like you said, it's a bullet point to use. They'll use it, but it might not mean what they're going to use it for. But
yeah.
It's something, you know, they can use to really say as a test that we're figuring stuff out and what we're doing is working or not. But they got to figure a lot of new things out, which is just unfortunate for them. And I hope that can get resolved. And I'm never a fan of holding guys out, especially when we're talking about these guys are making decisions, not necessarily, they're making decisions based upon what they're told, right? Like, hey, if you have an NCAA issue, we can get around it. So then they say we can go, and then you get there and then they say no, we couldn't get around it. That's always pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, and I see both sides of it. Like, both guys came from a program where there's a head coaching change, like Temple let go of Aaron McKee. Yep. Utah Valley's coach Mark Madsen took the same job at Cal. Actually, I think it's like the third time I've mentioned, but I saw him, I believe it was the WAC semifinals, Utah Valley out here, out here in Vegas. Guy absolutely has the goods as a shot blocker and really seemed to be developing an offensive game. So if they could somehow get Bandogo and or Reynolds on the court, I think that raises Cincy's ceiling a bit. But yeah, it's our promise to you, the listeners, that we will not overreact to whatever Cincy does to Georgia Tech. And I think that's all we got this week, Ben.
Hey, man, it's been nothing but a great time. I love talking hoops. So, you know, got some interesting games coming up. We'll see.
Absolutely.
Big 12 conference, best in the country.
Yes, sir.
Sports Social Podcast Network.